He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
And my companion to this show is out in Europe and will hopefully have some interesting things to say about what's going on in Europe in a couple of weeks when we can resume a show and he is back. But I'll start out by talking about rainy day driving because we have had a lot of rainy days in the Northwest Connecticut Corner broadcast area. And as I do this show, it has been pouring all morning and in many cases overnight, and they have been predicting all sorts of flood warnings and the like. And I drove up to where I am doing this broadcast from this morning on a variety of roads from Fairfield County, Connecticut, and was in a lot of rain and therefore had a lot of observations about driving through areas where there was extreme water flow going down the sides of some of the roads I was on. And we have talked on previous shows about tread depth and people being sure that their tires have some kind of reasonable tread on them for just this kind of weather, because a tire without treads is like a, I don't know what it is. It's like a skate without sharp edges. Mainly because of the concept of aquaplaning, which we have discussed, and it's where the tire loses contact with the actual road, and therefore you lose all control of steering, possibly of braking, and other factors that could get you into big trouble if you did not get back on firm pavement before something happened. And when you drive through a stream that is going down the side of a road and you have all four wheels on the road but two wheels maybe driving in the stream, you can really feel the difference of what driving through heavy water conditions can do. First of all, it can tug the car mostly to the right, assuming we're talking about the two right side tires being in this stream. And you will see that those streams will come out onto the travel part of the pavement of many of these roads. The roads are not all graded the same. They do not all defer the flow off to the side effectively. Pavement changes with temperature, it changes with age, it changes with wear, and a newly paved road can have water flowing more effectively off to the side of the road, whereas a worn pavement can allow water to flow across onto the travel part of the road, and that is where some of the problems come in. And some of the safety things about driving in this kind of conditions is that you should allow more space between you and the cars in front of you if you're driving in conditions and where there is heavy water existence on the travel lanes of roads. Many times some of the storm drains that are designed to catch some of this water are either backed up with leaves or plugged up with leaves, pushing the water away from them as opposed to draining the water through them. And all sorts of things can happen. And if you're not paying true attention, you will first notice something happens when one of your tires or one or more of your tires hit these patches of water. And you'll notice it because you'll hear it, you'll feel it through the steering wheel, and hopefully you will not find your car going in out of the direction of travel you want to be going and go into a slide or something like that. So for really wet weather conditions like we've been experiencing of late, it is really important that to the listeners that you check your tires and see whether your tires have an effective depth of tread on them, and if not, you might think about changing them and getting them new. This also goes for winter driving as well. We've talked about winter driving before, and while it's not winter now, you have similar situations that can occur if you do have tires that are near the end of their wear life on the tread. So that's that on that. This month, or the, actually, it's not this month. It's the July, August issue of one of my car magazines, Car and Driver. They have a very interesting test of a number of electric vehicles, and they come out with and their version of the EV of the year. I was quite surprised to see what it was, because we talk ad infinitum about the Tesla all the time. People are getting a little sensitive about the Tesla situation, because and Car and Driver is known not to mince words when they are critical of any vehicle that they test. But Tesla did not come out on top. They went through three models of the Tesla, the Model 3, the Model Y, and the Model S. They really bashed the Model Y, not about the electric performance. Well, sort of they did, but about the deplorable condition of their test vehicle as far as how well it was built. There was an extreme number of bad details in the production of this particular vehicle as far as fitment and that kind of thing. They also had technical issues which broke down, and they did that on another Tesla. But the winner, to my surprise, was the Mustang Mach-E. It's an electric Mustang. We've talked about it off and on the show. It's been hard to get my head wrapped around wanting to own an electric car at all, much less maybe an electric Mustang. Parts of this exterior of the car do give you a feeling that it has a Mustang-like look, but compared to the gasoline-powered Mustangs that we have been used to, it is certainly not the classic look that I seem to prefer with the non-electric versions. But it has gotten Car and Driver's Electric Vehicle of the Year Award. They have a long article about this vehicle, which I have not read the entire thing through for this show, as opposed to the short articles in on the eight others or seven others that they tried, which included the Nissan Leaf, the Volvo XC40, the Audi e-tron, the Porsche Taycan, the VW ID4, and they lowballed some of these because of not appropriate, adequate range for people. And we've talked about range anxiety with electric cars. I keep interviewing people about electric cars, and they have them. And the range anxiety factor is a very big variable in everybody's heads about moving over to an electric car, although the objection to the concept seems to be decreasing a bit as we go forward. Teslas are everywhere. Nissan Leafs are not everywhere. Chevy Bolts are not everywhere, but they are also different cars than the Teslas. Every non-Tesla electric car is, of course, very different than a Tesla. Tesla has got the very long lead advantage over everybody else, but I will say that the manufacturers of the alternatives are catching up very quickly. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens when we have far more electric cars on the road than we do now, and the issue of finding charging stations becomes what might be a temporary but annoying condition in some parts of the country. When electric cars outnumber the charging stations and people start trying to look for charging stations around. I've talked to several people whom I have seen charging their Teslas at Tesla charging stations around the northwest corner of Connecticut. There's one in Waterbury. There's one in Canaan. Usually there's at least one Tesla there, but I have yet to see multiple numbers of Teslas Tesla's charging areas, stations, because they do have between, I think it's 4 to 8 stations at most of their places of point, which is very good if there are a lot of Teslas running around that need charging it at the places where the charging stations are. The whole thing about electric cars is that you are going to always be charging your car overnight at your home address, assuming that's where you end up at the end of each day. So normally you would start out with almost, if not a full charge, 80% or better charge of these electric vehicles that you might end up owning. And therefore, if you are not doing a lot of long-distance driving on a daily basis, you're never going to have range anxiety. but you...
Question, though, for example. Let's just think for a second. Let's say you street park in New York City.
Well, that's the issue. If you started out from our northwest corner broadcast area, you'd know that the distance to New York City is somewhere between 90 and 100 miles to your normal destination in New York City, or maybe even 110. So all electric cars seem to have a minimum of 200 to 240 miles of range. 200 is the bare minimum you'd need to be able to go to New York and back without getting a charge in between, and that's really only if you were to go from point A to point B back to point A without taking any diversion from your straight line route.
I'm just thinking about, hey, way back in the day, I would go in for a couple of days, or my sister, who is out at the beach, for example, comes in. So,
well,
and she'd never get the range. So,
well, if you can get to an electric outlet. But you were using what if you're sitting on the street in New York?
What I'm saying is, if you choose to street park so that you're not paying horrendous parking, and you're going out, but you're going to be in the city for a couple of days.
Until there are street parking meters and charging meters at places, and they won't be in New York, because you know when you drive around New York, you look for a parking space anywhere you can find one on the street.
The only reason that I'm throwing this out there is because obviously if you're leaving from here and it's a precise trip, that's
one thing. The battery will not discharge while the car is parked. So to answer your question succinctly, if you just go to New York and park on the street overnight or two nights and don't drive the car in the city, you probably are not going to have a problem getting from here to there and back with the charge that you achieved at your home starting base. But if you were to go to Boston, for example, it's a little different because Boston's further. I don't know what we are from Boston, but we're from my house and my location here in the northwest corner to anywhere in Massachusetts in that range. It's anywhere from 140 to 185 to 195 miles. Now, you do the math on a 185-mile destination point and multiply it by two, you have to have a battery pack that can go 370 miles without charging in between. And if you were not able to find a destination charging space in Boston, which is highly unlikely, you'd figure out how to do it. You wouldn't be able to do a round trip on many of these electric vehicles without an interim charge.
Right, and in due course, if people can be electrified remotely, that's a good thing.
Well, you've talked about the electrified remotely recharging thing. I don't know that that is out there.
I'm just saying if it can, but then the other thing that goes...
Well, it would go a long way to charging. There is a article this morning online, I guess I was reading it, about an electric vehicle that can go, that has just run a test and gone 450 miles on a single charge. It is not a car in production, but the picture of the vehicle shows that it has solar panel hood and a solar panel roof to help charge as you go, which the first question is it sunny all the time you're driving it to get that 450-mile range? But they're talking about a long-range battery that is half the strength of the Tesla batteries that is currently out there. And you look at the car, and you know it's not a very heavy car, even though electric cars are quite heavy because the battery packs are heavy. It is very aerodynamic, and it's probably got appropriate tires that roll with the least resistance and all that. And it's a test bed for coming vehicles, I think, more than something that you can go out and buy today. But 400, I filled up my Jeep Cherokee the other day. It was getting an average of 30 to 31 miles for the tank that I filled up on, and it's a 15.8-gallon tank. And I filled it up, and it was very empty. It took me less than 7 minutes to fill up the tank from empty to full, and I had an instant 450 miles showing on my trip computer that I could do if I maintained a 30-mile-per-gallon average economy in driving that tank to empty again. And that was, you know, under 10 minutes to do that, and I automatically had 450 miles.
And I would just like to throw in, especially since Jay is not here, that there's going to be room for, in my view, both. I mean, it's simply because there are people who are, you know, sufficiently skeptical about other people and other things that they would want to have mobility. You know, if everything that you do is electric,
that is exactly why electric cars, as they are coming on stream, are going to be slow become accepted by a certain population of users of vehicles that do a lot more than just a under 200-mile-a-day use of their vehicle that might be the normal for a lot of people. There's no question. For example, this vehicle that I just filled up, I went from my location, Massachusetts, to a location in Fairfield County, which was 187 miles. I did not have to charge it. I did not have to fill it up. And I came up to my broadcast area, which is another 62 miles. So you do the math on that, and it's, 248 or 9 miles. And I still have over a half a tank, or I have just under half a tank of fuel showing on the car without having to do anything about plugging it in or topping off the tank before I do the next, let's say, 50 miles of driving, or even 100 miles of driving before I start running out. Look, this is all the problems that most people don't think about, and don't think about the convenience of not having to plug your car in every night. Your car in every night actually is, as one friend of mine with a Tesla Model Y, new Model Y, is plugging into a 110-volt plug, not a 240-volt plug. And so he comes back from whatever he's been doing every day, parks the car next to the house he has, and he has a long extension cord to plug it in on an outlet that's on a porch, and the car is plugged in every time he comes back. And I do not know what his range is every time he starts out on the next trip of the car, but it is, you know, this is the only way he can feel comfortable about going beyond, just say, a 40-mile distance and back, which if you go out and come back, that's double, that's 80 miles,
right?
Without worrying about whether he can do it or not, whether he has to wait another hour to get that extra mileage range into his battery at a 110-volt charge rating, okay?
So. No, totally. There's a practical application that is going to, here's a good term, evolve as more and more, as you say, of these cars become available. And in the meantime, people are going to do both. By the way, I am not on any level opposed to the whole electric angle.
I'm not either. But I also know how I drive, and I know what I like to do, be able to do, without worrying about the issue of mileage range with an electric vehicle when you have to really sit for an hour or more at high, or a half an hour or more at high-speed charging stations, or hours at low charge rate stations.
I have to interrupt simply because I have minor PTSD from this, but at the time when we had a diesel vehicle, everything was going swimmingly, except that we definitely needed to get diesel. And the minute that you definitely need to get blank is the minute that you're suddenly in the middle of the Gobi Desert. You can't find...
This goes to the problem. I always wonder why people run out of gas on highways. And I saw two today.
Oh, really?
Well, I said they ran out of gas. They were sitting in their car, and the car was stopped. They might have just been on their cell phones.
But, so let's try that, because I think that people are. I mean,
people don't look at the gas gauges, you know, when these gauges get down, they're reasonably accurate in most new cars. But then when they get down to a certain level, an orange light comes on in my Jeep Cherokee, for example. As it gets lower, it eventually turns to red. When it turns to red, I know I probably have less than a gallon in the Jeep. And if I'm playing that game, I better be darn well near a station to go, because at 30 miles a gallon, I know I have less than 30 miles to.
Yes, this was not actually, this wasn't one of those situations. This was unavoidable. It happened. It wasn't an everyday thing. I know way back when, you know, you've known people who are just who don't even put a drop in until it's the red light's on, and you also know people who don't let it get past, you know,
three quarters down before they top it off.
Right. I actually recall somebody with a Suburban, like, as far as they were concerned, if they were down to half a tank, they needed to refill because they didn't want to stand there and pay for what it costs to fill it up. Anyway, we've got 3 minutes left.
Yeah, we got very little time left. I just want to look. I'm reading an article about. Titled Treading New Ground. It's all about new tire technology, which seems to be coming on stream. I talked about possibly airless tires a few shows back with very little comment on it. This article is addressing sort of what I was addressing, but it says that they're developing hard plastic or hard rubber tires like you can buy on, you know, strollers and that kind of thing for vehicles. And I think they're a long way off. I think they don't get, they have as low rolling resistance. They do not have as low rolling resistance in most cases, although the compounds of these tires are going to have a lot, and the tread design is going to have a lot to do with that. And I don't know whether we're going to see hard tires, you know, airless tires anytime soon in any cars, but they are studying the situation. And this also comes probably because I said there was possibly a tire rubber shortage in this whole COVID thing, which is going to make some tires hard to find. That does not seem to have been a story with a lot of legs, because I have not seen any new articles saying that there's a tire shortage coming.
Oh, there's always tomorrow.
There's always tomorrow.
And in the final minute, any other do you want the safety tip, or can I just tell people, please, there's a turn signal. You've got a stalk on your.
Oh, don't get me going.
Okay, there you go. I didn't mispick. Okay.
The lack of turning signal.
It's just bad manners.
Is reaching really a horrible rate because, and I'm really obsessed with it, as you are. But
I'm just observing.
We can't retrain the drivers.
No, but
the other thing that really drives me nuts is people who drive in what they call, they want, the highway people say is a passing lane, at or below even the speed limit that they can go, or even if they can go above. And the right lane is becoming the fast lane to move on many multi-lane roadways. And it's illegal to pass technically on state laws in this situation, but cars are going down right lanes faster than they're going down the left lane, and or when there are three lanes, the left and the middle lanes. And people don't pull over and go slow in the slow traffic lane or the cruise lane the way the signs periodically tell you to do on these interstates. So that's my take on that one.
He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.